Good afternoon. My name is Lynn, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the IVTP SGA conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there'll be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Melanie Lilleston, you may begin your conference.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome everyone to the conference call today on the Incarcerated Veterans Transition Program. We are going to be going over very briefly the SGA that was just released from the Department of Labor with funds underneath the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program for organizations serving the incarcerated veterans within their community. I am going to be taking questions at the conclusion of the call, so if you could please just make note of your questions, and we'll do that after I give my brief presentation, and then we'll get through as many questions as we can. If I don't answer your question, I'll be glad to follow up with you at a later date, but most of your questions probably will be answered during my presentation. I did send out the presentation earlier today. However, if you did not receive it, you can download it from our website, which is www.nchv.org. On the right-hand side of the page, you'll see the teleconference schedule. If you click on that, it says NCHV conference calls. When you click on that, in the middle of the page, you'll be able to download the presentation as well as the SGA for this particular grant. We are recording the call, and we will be posting the audio up probably in the next couple of days, so if you do want to reference any material during the call, you will be able to do that as well. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started. As I said, I'm going to go over fairly briefly the Incarcerated Veterans Transition Program and then go into the actual application, and then we'll answer any questions that you guys may have at the conclusion of the call. The first thing I want to talk about or go over are the objectives for this particular grant. This is a grant that is offered from the Department of Labor under the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. The Incarcerated Veterans Transition Program grant, the IVTP grant, specifically targets incarcerated veterans or those that are currently or have been recently released from incarceration, and this program assists them in getting and accessing employment and removing the barriers that they may face in regards to getting employment. So this is an employment-focused grant, and it is important that you realize that the outcomes of this grant are tied to full-time meaningful employment. So not all of your clients may be appropriate for this program because we are talking about full-time meaningful employment. So for those that may have severe disabilities and not be able to work the full-time or some psychological issues, something along those lines, this program may not be for them. However, it is something that we definitely encourage you to work with as many clients as you possibly can. So keeping that in mind, on slide two here, you'll see the objectives of the actual program. And they are to provide referrals and counseling services to assist in reintegration incarcerated and or transitioning incarcerated veterans who are at risk of becoming homeless into meaningful employment within the labor force, and to stimulate the development of effective service delivery systems that will address the complex problems facing incarcerated and or transitioning incarcerated veterans who are at risk of becoming homeless. So everything that your program does and everything that you offer within your program design should tie back to these two objectives. If you cannot tie back to these objectives, then your program should not be doing it because these are the overall programmatic objectives of this grant. This grant does run on a program year, meaning it has a start date and an end date. This program year starts July 1st, and it will conclude in June 30th, 2011. There is optional year funding. It is a one-year grant with two optional years of renewal funding that you will be able to apply for. And I'm going to go over those in the next with a few caveats there, but I'm going to go over those in a few minutes. This grant will fund at least 12 incarcerated veteran transition programs across the country. So this is a program that will service the whole entire country, not just a certain geographic location. So it is competitive across the whole entire country. There is a total of $4 million available, and grants will be funded up to, but not exceeding $300,000. So the maximum that you will be able to apply for will be $300,000. Now, two key things to keep in mind with this is that the start date is July 1st, meaning your program needs to be up and running fairly close to that July 1st if possible, because as soon as July 1st hits, you are going to be responsible for meeting your goals and objectives on a quarterly basis. And if there's a length of time that you are not able to serve veterans, it's going to adversely affect your goals and outcomes that will be tracked within common measures. So you must be ready to serve veterans come July 1st. The second thing that you must keep in mind is that you are going to and you're going to have to provide follow-up services for 9 months starting July 1st, 2011 through March 31st, 2012. What this means is that just because your program year is over, you still have to track those individuals that you have been working with and yet you have placed into employment. So it is not just a one-year grant. It's a one-year grant with additional follow-up for those people who have gone through your program. So it's necessary for you to keep that in mind within your budgeting and your programmatic design to be able to meet those goals and objectives of that particular portion of the grant. Now, optional two-year funding can happen and you will be eligible to apply if you meet a minimum of 90% of your planned cumulative quarterly goals for your federal expenditures, your enrollments, your placements into employment and training by the end of the third quarter, which means you have to meet all of your goals and objectives or become very close. That 90%, there is no leeway there. So if you come in at 85%, you will not be eligible to receive or get second-year funding. You must also comply with the terms identified in the SGA, meaning whatever you put within your application and sign off to means that you must meet all of those, and you must include and meet all of your fiscal reports by the due date. The biggest thing is that you must meet your objectives and your goals and your placement objectives for that first year, the first three quarters at least, in order to be eligible to receive funding for the additional year. So that's how you must, in order to do that, you must meet those criteria in order to apply for the second year of funding. All right, so the program focus is specifically aimed at providing referral and counseling services to include job training and placement assistance, job readiness and life skill support services, housing, health care, and other benefits to expedite the reintegration of incarcerated and or transitioning veterans who are at risk of homelessness into the labor force. So basically you're working with incarcerated and or transitioning veterans, and you're helping them to remove all of the barriers that are currently in place for them to get and receive employment. So a lot of that will include some health care, mental health. It might also include some job skills training, anything that could be linked to their inability to receive or get employment. Specifically, the program will assist veterans by providing outreach, intake, pre-enrollment and assessment, referrals, and conducting job training, employment, and readiness services. You'll also do referrals to training services. If you don't provide them in-house, you can provide referrals to training services. VA benefit assessments, meaning that you will be working with those clients to make sure that they are receiving any benefits that they might be eligible from the VA. Coordination with other federal and veteran service programs. You do not want to duplicate services that are already being offered within your community, so you want to make sure that you're taking well advantage of those services that are already up and running and coordinating with them. Coordinating with any other veteran service organizations, VSOs can help with providing some maybe additional housing. They might also be able to assist you in some of the benefits that you are trying to get for the veterans. You just want to make sure that you're partnering with all of those groups that are currently serving veterans in your community. You want to make sure that you have referrals to health care, both from the VA and maybe a community clinic if you are far away from a medical center. Mental health counseling, including PTSD, traumatic brain injury, maybe some family services, anything that would be a barrier there. And rehab services if you are working with a clientele or decide to work with a clientele that may have substance abuse problems. Most importantly, referrals to housing. while I said several times that the HVRP program, Incarcerated Veterans Transition Program, pays for the services to remove those barriers, it does not pay for housing. It's a very important distinction. They pay for the services piece, removing those barriers, but they will not pay for housing. So you have to partner with a group that will provide housing. And coordination with pre-sentencing and or diversion programs. This particular program allows you to work with individuals who may have just entered the justice system and work with them in regards to diversion and or alternative sentencing. So an individual does have to be in the judicial system for you to service them. However, it doesn't mean that they have there is no length of time that they have to have served within a prison system. The two main performance measures that you're going to be held up against within your program, there is a set of common measures that you're going to be responsible for meeting, and you are going to have to fill out that common measures sheet. That's one of the appendices with your goals and objectives. However, the two that you must meet and that you are required to meet at a standard rate are the entered enrollment rate, the EER, and the retention following placement rate. The entered enrollment rate, minimum rate, and this means in order to be considered for funding, is going to be 56%. The retention following placement is 65%. So keep in mind that your entered enrollment is your organization's ability to get veterans employment, while the retention means are you going to be able to have them keep those jobs at a long-term basis. The entered employment rate is calculated by the number of participants who enter employment divided by the number of participants who have exited the program. The retention following placement is the number of participants who entered enrollment who are still employed 180 and 270 days after placement, which means that they have been able to and are keeping that employment, divided by the total number of participants who entered employment. So once again, this is a long-term plan for you to serve veterans and remove those barriers to employment. It's not just that you're getting someone a job, it's that you're getting them a job and they are able to keep that employment on a long-term basis. This is a results-oriented model, meaning that there is specific things that they are going to be looking at, and those can be seen within common measures. There is no program model that is required, but you must meet, and your program should include all of the things that are included on slide 10. Outreach, meaning how are you going to find and let other veterans in your community know or find veterans for your program. Assessment, once they're coming in, how are you going to determine if they are the appropriate person and they are eligible to receive services underneath this program? If they are not eligible to receive services, then you must provide some sort of referrals to an organization or a program that might be able to assist them. If you determine that they are eligible and that they are appropriate for the program, then there'll be an enrollment process. And that will be when you come up with your individual work plans for each person enrolled in your program. Their individual employment plans, the IEP, so each person will have a separate or an independent plan based on their skill set and the type of work that they're looking to obtain. Then they'll participate in training, supportive services, all of those things, those barriers that you identified within the assessment enrollment process to remove those barriers for employment. Then they will enter into the full-time employment, and then you'll do follow-up. So it is a process that you do work through with each individual, and it will vary based on the individual's needs within your program. So that's a general overview of just the program itself. Once again, everything is aimed at removing the barriers to employment for those incarcerated and/or transitioning veterans. Now we're going to move into the actual grant application, some of the important things that you need to take in mind when you're filling out the application and the different sections that are included. First of all, to be eligible for an HVRP, you must be a state and or local workforce and investment board a public agency, which includes state, county, and city levels, a for-profit or commercial entity, and or a nonprofit organization, including faith-based and community-based organizations. So you must fall into one of these four categories to be eligible for funding. If you do not, you can partner with an organization that does fall into one of these categories. Just keep in mind that they will be the funded agency and you will be considered a subcontractor underneath that. So to be eligible, you must fall into one of the categories listed on slide 12. Keep in mind that nonprofit organizations who are 501c4 are not eligible to apply due to lobbying restrictions there. This is a grant that can be either submitted online or sent through the mail or hand-delivered. Just a few things to keep in mind for the online application process. It's done through grants.gov. If you have not registered before for any other grant process, it doesn't necessarily have to be Department of Labor, you must do that through the grants.gov/get-started. It will list the process and take you through. It does take a little bit of time to do, so if you are interested in applying for funds through grants.gov, you must do. I would suggest getting started now. Documents that you will, basically you're going to upload all of your documents within grants.gov, and the acceptable formats include documents, PDFs, or text files, and it'll walk you through that process, but keep in mind that those are the only acceptable forms there. You can also submit a hard copy to the grant officer here in D.C. Now, if you are going to submit a hard copy, it can be mailed and or hand-delivered to the D.C. office. Keep in mind that if you do mail it, you must mail it through like FedEx, somewhere UPS delivered, so that way you have confirmation that it is delivered. It must include one original signed in blue ink and two copies of the cover letter, executive summary, technical proposal, and cost proposal. So it's three of each of those where one is an original signed copy. You're suggested to use tabs and or binders to show, differentiate between the three different sections. Maybe use a different sheet of paper, a different color of paper so that they know that you're entering into a new section, but do not bind the application. They need to be able to take it apart and make copies of it fairly easily. And if you submit a hard copy, you must include a CD with an electric copy of the file. I would include both a PDF and a Word document if most of your information is in a Word document, but I would highly suggest that you save the whole entire document as a PDF so that way that there is no question that they'll be able to read it. So if you send a hard copy, it must be delivered by 4 p.m. on June 4th with the one original signed copy, signed copy, and then also two copies of each section, as well as a CD within that package. That is different than some of the other applications that the Department of Labor has asked for. As I mentioned, there are three different sections of the actual grant application. The first one is the executive summary. The second is the technical proposal, and the third is the cost proposal. Some key things to keep in mind is that the total application should not exceed NTE 75 single space pages and 12-point font with 1-inch margins. So really keep in mind that everything should be single spaced. It needs to be a 12-point font with 1-inch margins. Attachments are included in the 75-page maximum. There will be some things that are not included within that, but it will be listed in the SGA for you, but the 75-page maximum is there. They will not read past page 75. As I mentioned, all sections and subsections are to be divided and clearly identified, and all pages must be numbered. So if, for instance, they take your application out of the package, somehow it gets dropped on the floor, they will be able to put it back together and in a reasonable amount of time. So everything should be numbered, including your budgets and or letters of support. Anything and everything should be numbered. An original signed in blue ink and two copies of each section are required if you are submitting it via hand deliver or a hard copy, as well as that CD. Now, the executive summary, as I mentioned, it's 1 to 2 pages. It is the overall summary, the general tidbits, the certain things that you want them to know firsthand looking at your application. So I always suggest that you write this at the conclusion of your proposal because it will give you a good idea. It's a good summary of everything that you've included within your technical proposal and your cost breakdowns. It should reflect your overall grantee's strategy, your area to be served. Now, one question I always get is our location is in a certain city, but we want to serve the whole entire county. That is fine. You just want to make sure it is very clear to the people reading the application what areas you are going to be serving, either through a map or some sort of geographic dissemination, so that way everyone is clear of who you'll be serving. You also want to talk about your grantees' experience in serving incarcerated veterans and or transitioning veterans, your proposed strategy, your program design, your method, your projects and or statement of works with schedules or timelines. Those timelines are very important because they want to be able to know that you'll be able to start the program on or very, very close to that July 1st deadline. And then also the descriptions of your measures of success for the plan. They will look at your common measures, but it's important that you lay out and really articulate what you're going to be looking at in measures of success and how you might be looking to make changes if need be. Now we're going to go through the technical proposal. This is the kind of, as I like to say, the big portion of your application. If you look at slide 17, these are the different categories that you must show. All of these are subheadings that you must address within your application. So you want to make sure that each one of these bullet points is a bullet point within your technical proposal and that you address each one of them as I go through them. So the first one is need for program. This is how you're going to show that definitely you do need it, there is a need for your program. So you want to talk about the geographic area to be served and provide an estimate on the number of incarcerated veterans and or transitioning veterans within the area. Now you can get some of that through the challenge data. You could also talk with or work with your veterans outreach officers and also speak with some of the local providers in the jail to see if they would, or prisons to see if they would be able to give you some of those numbers. You also want to include any of the local poverty and unemployment rates in the area and show so that you would be suited to serve those individuals within the program. You're also going to talk about your approach or strategy to increase employment and retention. So how is your program going to identify and assess and enroll veterans into employment within your community? So what are your outreach strategies? You're going to want to show and provide current labor market information and the type of specific job opportunities and industries that are in demand within your community. There are certain employment that or industry that is growing within your community. You want to talk about it and explain why your organization is the best and how you'll be able to get in veterans jobs. You're also going to describe the employer's local employment network and what agreements you have in place with those employers to hire veterans. This is not just removing those barriers. It's getting them the training. It's removing the barriers, getting them the training that they need in order to get jobs, but then also making sure that there are jobs available for those veterans within that community. You're also going to talk about within this section the activities and the curriculums that you're going to be there. You want to make sure that you describe the process of when an individual comes into your program and when they leave their program, the process, the flow of employment and training services for that. You do, and it is suggested that you include some curriculum that you will be using based on how much space you do have. I wouldn't suggest including every single curriculum that you have. But I do think it's important that you do show that they are extensively thought out and that you have some sort of curriculum for them, and they're not just five-minute trainings that are offered one afternoon for anybody and everybody that wants to come in. It needs to be tied directly to getting that veteran training and services to get that ultimate job. You're also going to talk about any follow-up that will be there. Remember, you must follow up 180 and 270 days after a veteran has received employment. And you must describe how your job placement and retention activities will identify and track any instances of reincarceration if they occur. So do you have a way to find out if an individual has been reincarcerated or if there has been some issues there? Do you have the connections for that? This is also where you're going to fill out and complete a quarterly, it's the Appendix D, the Plan Quarterly Technical Performance Goals. These are the place that you're going to show what you expect your percentages to be, and you must include this. It's the Appendix D in order for it to be there. So, yes, you do have to fill that out in order to be eligible here. The next section is the linkages with correctional institutions and or other veterans organizations that serve incarcerated and or transitioning incarcerated veterans who are at risk of homelessness. You're going to talk about and describe the linkages that you have with correctional institutions and other facilities that might help you identify potential veterans for the program. How and who is going to help suggest that how you're going to get veterans within your program. You're going to talk about the correctional facilities and list the correctional facilities that you're going to be working with. And you're also going to talk about how you're going to work with and conduct trainings and how you're going to coordinate efforts with other public and private sectors within the community. So once again, you do not want to provide or duplicate services here, so you're going to want to talk about how some organizations are serving veterans and how you're going to tie them into that. Next is a linkage with other providers of employment and training services to incarcerated and or transitioning incarcerated veterans. So this is how you're going to talk about your partnership with organizations, employers, educational, and training providers. Who is giving the training within your community, and how are you going to partner with them? Describe and identify any collaborative partnerships with agencies or organizations who have relative experience in job searches, job readiness, job coaching, skills assessment, resume writing, interviewing techniques, and skill building. All of these things are vital when a veteran is looking for employment, and you must show the collaboration that you're going to be working with them. Most importantly, you're going to want to talk about your relationship with the DVOPs and the leavers, how you're going to work with them, and how you're going to make sure that they're tied into the individuals enrolled in your program. You also want to address how you will implement case management to help with the individual plan for each veteran enrolled in your program. It is necessary to have that case management because you are removing those barriers. And then you want to talk about the training that will help and will work to help veterans get ready for jobs and improve their job readiness for positions within the community. You're also going to have linkages with other federal agencies. So if you're working, you want to make sure that you have eligibility determined through the VA and how you're going to determine eligibility, how you're going to track the process and report individuals' process of getting those benefits. And you're also going to work with other groups like your local VISN at the VA. You're also, if you've got any grant and per diem programs, any HUD programs that would be working there, you want to make sure that you are tied into those programs. You're also going to work with coordination with pre-sentencing and or diversion programs. If you are going to be doing this, you're going to talk about the proposed strategies for this, and providing alternative sentencing and referrals and counseling services. You're also going to describe your program, how you're going to incorporate some mental health and community resources within the VA's jail and court outreach specialists who are working with your local jails to help law enforcement learn about properly working with returning veterans. A lot of this with the pre-sentencing and diversion is targeted toward returning veterans, not limited to, but is targeted towards them and helping them identify some of the needs there so they do not get lengthy sentences, but then are referred to community-based organizations that are able to service those veterans with the needs that they have. You're also going to talk about your proposed supportive and healthcare strategies for incarcerated and or transitioning veterans. So this is important because you're going to talk about healthcare. You're going to talk about if you're going to be working with the VA for healthcare as well as any HUD continuum of care partners within your community. Supportive services, transportation, child care, family health services, your mainstream services, your food stamps, your Social Security, all of those types of things. Your other veteran service organizations and collaborative partnerships within your community that may provide PTSD training, traumatic brain injuries, or anything else that might be offered there. You're also going to talk about your proposed housing strategy. How are you going to ensure that these individuals who are at risk of being homeless are going to be able to find, receive, and keep housing? Do you have linkages for the HUD-VASH, for the HHS Community Resources, VA Grant and Per Diem programs? Who is going to help you serve these incarcerated or and or transitioning veterans within your community in finding housing? So you must have that linkage to housing. You're also going to address your organizational's capacity to provide required program activities. So this is where you're going to talk about your key staff, your experience, your history, your knowledge, your qualifications. Explain why your organization is the best organization to get the funding to serve veterans in your community. You're also going to talk about your proposed reporting methodology and measures of success. This is where you're going to talk about how you're going to make sure that you're able to serve and receive the outcomes that you have in place, and what changes and how you'll monitor those changes within your program year. And finally, sustainability. How will this program outlive or outlast the federal funding that you will be receiving? You would just want to make a worthwhile thought to be able to show that you know that this money will not continue forever and that you do know that and you will be looking for other ways of funding within your community. So as I mentioned, that is the technical proposal. All of those bullet points on slide 17, you need to make sure that you address them and that you make sure you cover the information that is listed within the SGA starting on page 34. The next section is the cost proposal. The content is listed on slide 18. It's the application for federal assistance, the budget information sheet, the budget narrative, the assurances and certification page. You must have had a financial audit within the past 18 months. You must show that. List of all employment and training grants and subcontracts for the past 3 years. The survey on ensuring equal opportunity for applicants, which is Appendix F. And indirect charges or certificate of direct costs, which is Appendix I. The Appendix A, which is the SF-424, SF is standard form 424, it must be signed. There are no matching fund requirements for this grant. If you have some, that is great and will score highly in your favor, but they are not required. And whoever you list on this point of contact will be the person that the Department of Labor will ultimately follow up with. The budget narrative must include at a minimum. So if you have more categories, that is fine. I wouldn't go crazy with it, as I know most of you will have budgets in-house that will have many more categories than this. But these are the ones that you must include. Personnel costs, fringe benefits, explanation of costs and methodologies. How do you come about finding out how much one of those costs? Any follow-up services. So when we talked about your follow-up for the 90, 180, and 278 days, what is the cost for that and how are you going to pay for that? It should be listed here. Any equipment purchases, anything less than everything has to be less than $5,000 per unit, and then any other funds that you may have there as well. A couple things to keep in mind when you're dealing with your budget is that you must plan and obligate funds in the budget for follow activities at 90, 100, and 270 days. So you must track them and include them in your budget if you're going to be able to pay, if you want to be able to pay for it. You should also talk about and mention your participant in financial tracking mechanisms in their technical narrative proposal. So how are you going to track the individuals within your program for those amount of times, and if that how that's going to fiscally affect your budget? So that's the budget, and then the assurances are those forms that you download and you fill out. So you must fill out those in order to be eligible underneath the technical, underneath the cost proposal. The evaluation criteria is listed on slide 22. Need for the program is 10 points. The overall strategy to increase employment and retention in employment is for 35 points. Up to 5 additional points if your overall strategy includes an innovative approach for addressing barriers to employment faced by incarcerated and or transitioning veterans. So there's up to 40 points there if you can show that you are going to be effective in serving that population. The quality and extent of linkages with other providers and services is 25 points. Your demonstrated capability in providing required program services is 20 points. And the reporting, the quality of overall housing strategy is 10 points. There's a total of 105 points. The minimum score that you have to get in order to be eligible is 70. However, the competitive range will most likely be set a lot higher than that. Now, slide 23 has some important reminders for you. In order to be eligible for the IVTP program, an individual must be recently incarcerated and or must be transitioning from an institution of incarcerated and be a veteran. So they must meet the definition of a veteran, a person who served in active military and who was not discharged or released under conditions other than dishonorable. So if they have a dishonorable discharge, they are ineligible for services underneath this program. And then they also must be a veteran who has been incarcerated or transitioning from an institution of incarceration within 18 months of a release or who has been released within 6 months. So if a person is still in incarceration within 18 months of their release or within 6 months of being released, they must fall into one of those two categories as well, be eligible as a veteran. Each organization can only submit one application, and it is vital that you include participation and outreach with your DVOPs and leavers. They can, but are not required to assist with follow-up with state wage information, but they are not required to do so. So you want to make sure that you have that working relationship with them, and that'll make your life a lot simpler if you're able to use them as a resource to follow up with individuals within the state wage system to be able to track them. So your DVOPs and leavers can help you do that, but they are not required to do that. So that's why a good working relationship with them is vital. You must work with organizations or programs that are familiar with the complex needs of homeless veterans, in this case, incarcerated veterans. It is very important that you show that you're well-versed in the needs of that particular population and why you are the best. Remember that this is an employment-focused program aimed at helping veterans get and maintain long-term meaningful employment. It is a highly competitive grant with very high outcomes. In particular, this grant requires a minimum score of 70, but a competitive range is usually much higher than that. The average cost per placement for the previous year, now I will say, I didn't mention this earlier, there was an IVTP grant several years before where there was five or six pilot projects that were done. This program is going to be a little bit different, but the focus is the same of working with incarcerated and or transitioning program veterans. During that first round of funding, the average cost for placement was around $3,500. Keep in mind that you cannot exceed $4,000 per placement of an individual in your program. That is the maximum that you'll be allowed to charge. The program will be awarded no later than June 30th of this year, and it begins July 30th. So there is not a lot of leeway time if you're looking to get staff hired and such. You could be awarded as late as July 30th for a start date of you could be notified of award as late as June 30th and required to start your program as early as July 1st. So there will not and could possibly not be a very long time for you to get things set up. And finally, you must attend and budget for the post-award conference, which will be held in late July, early August. And it's essential for you to budget for at least two staff members to attend that event. I know that I've covered a lot of different information. I'm sure there's still some questions. We'll take as many questions as we possibly can in the next 15 to 17 minutes. So the operator will come back on and tell you how to go about asking questions, and if you can keep them as brief as possible and limit them to one or two so that way we can get through as many people as we can, I would appreciate it.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Steve Bolton.
Okay. I'm seeing that we could be serving veterans within 18 months of release, but it would seem like serving anyone who's not going to be out within at least six months would defeat the purpose of being able to put people into employment.
Most likely, yes.
And let's see, I've got a couple of other questions. Do you think that there would be any, if we wanted to do a high percentage of the pretrial diversion type program, do you think that would count against us? We have a substance abuse program that, substance abuse treatment in lieu of incarceration. And so we're pretty well connected up with the drug courts, and there's also a veterans court that is started up. And I'm just wondering if you would see any problem in us having that be a major focus in a program.
I would not. My caution would be to you to make sure that you show that that's where the greatest need is within your community, and focus in on how that's your greatest access to and the greatest need within your community. And if you could successfully do that, I don't envision that being a problem.
Okay, and one other thing, one new thing that I saw in the SGA from previous HBRP was the thing of registering with CCR, and now I can't remember what that stands for, and also the naming of an authorized organizational representative. Is that can you tell me anything about those processes?
They are required underneath all the new HVRP and any basically anything coming from the Department of Labor Vets Office. It's, from what I understand, it's not a very time-intensive process, but it is required from them starting under these next round of funding.
Yeah, and then finally, if I can ask one more question, last year, we submitted in 2008 and did not get funded for HVRP. Then on June 29th of 2009, we were notified of funding, and I'm just wondering, I've never been able to figure out how you could get up and running if you don't have any indication that you're going to get funded. You can't really go and hire people.
To be honest with you, what I'll tell you is, and it's the unfortunate setup of the HVRP program is, and this is not always the case, so don't hold me to this, but usually these grants go to programs that are already up and running, and so they have the systems in place or they have a skeleton system already in place for that, and it's just a matter of expanding. So they may have one case manager on staff that could serve, 10 or 15 veterans for the first couple of weeks and then, hire additional staff. But it's the unfortunate setup of this program is that you have to be ready to go fairly quickly because your retention and your employment, objectives are tied to every day that ticks off is one that goes against you for not serving a veteran.
Sure. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from Vivian Bush.
Hi. I had two questions. The first one was you said that there were demonstration projects that were done, I think it was back in 2006. I did see a list of the people who did them. Mm-hmm. Was there anything published from that?
There was, but it's from the Department of Labor, and you'd have to request it from them. I unfortunately don't have a copy of it.
Okay. Now, do you know who I would talk to request that?
The Department of Labor Vets Office.
Okay.
And what I'll tell, the only thing I'll tell you is that the reason why I'm kind of hesitant to steer you in that direction, that original project was a correlation or a collaboration between Department of Labor, VA, and Department of Justice. So the scope was fairly the same, but some of the funding requirements and the programmatic requirements were a little bit different. So,
okay.
You know, it may be helpful, but I wouldn't heavily rely on that because some of the scope is different based on now.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. And then my other question was just a technical one. You were saying earlier, you said a couple of times that the technical proposal was supposed to be single space. Mm-hmm. But when I looked at page 30, it says single-sided, double-space.
You're correct. I'm sorry. I didn't
okay.
change that there. So, yes, you are correct.
Just wanted
single-sided,
to make sure.
Double-space. You're correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sorry. My words get away from me sometimes.
Your next question comes from Debbie Brock.
Hi. My question is about the eligibility of the participants. It says 18 months within 18 months of release or 6 months after, but then it also talks about people who have not yet been sentenced. If you were to work with people who had not yet been sentenced and say they are put on probation or just released, how does that work toward your eligibility?
It's considered alternative sentencing. So if they're in the system and you work with them at that particular time when they are still in the system, so if you, like the gentleman was talking before, you have connections with your treatment courts, or your veterans courts, if they identify them as veterans when they are, you know, before their sentence, but they are in the system, judicial system, then you could enroll them into the program and serve them that way.
Okay, so they don't have to necessarily be within 18 months of release or 6 months after. In that case.
In that case, yes.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from Steve Whitty.
Hi. The question is about, it's actually two questions. Does at risk of homelessness actually include people who are currently homeless?
Well, I mean, the assumption here is that if they're in prison and they have nowhere to go, that identifies them as at risk. So I'm assuming what you're talking about is someone that is in the system that was homeless when they went in and will obviously be homeless when they come out.
And 6 months after release, they might have been homeless during those 6 months of release.
Correct. That's fine.
So that they are eligible.
Yes.
And the next question is about HVRP funding. If we currently do receive HVRP funding, are we able to apply for this totally different grant?
You are. It's going to be a different population than you're serving currently. So you want to make that very clear that it's going to be two separate programs. And that, without getting into too much detail, because I don't want to confuse everybody else, and I'm happy to answer your question offline, but you don't want to enroll a person in IVTP that you have, and you also have the HVRP. You don't want to commingle those services within your own program.
Okay. Thank you.
I will say that if you are an IVT program and you don't have HVRP money and there's someone else in your community that does, you can work together to work on the same individual. It describes that towards the end of the application, and I'm glad to go over that a little bit more. Essentially, they have to be two different programs. They can't be run by the same organization.
Okay, thank you. I think we have one more question.
I'm sorry. The 90-day goals obtaining is for second-year consideration of funding, but the 65 and the 56 performance measure goal is at the end of 270 days. Is that correct?
Yes.
At the end of the entire grant period?
That's the grant period, yeah. Well, they're going to do it on a quarterly basis, so they are going to monitor those on a quarterly basis.
Okay, so
obviously you're not. Obviously,
reach the 56 and 65 quarterly. However, we are encouraged for second-year funding to have at least 90%.
90% of your proposed objective, so 90% of the 56.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Thomas Griffin.
Yes. Under this program, how long can we have a veteran in technical training before he or she actually obtains employment?
There is no maximum. However, I'll tell you that because of the process there, you know, it's a pretty fast turnaround time based on the time frames there. I would encourage you to take a look at the technical assistance guide that's in the back of one of the appendices there. I forget which one it is. That'll walk through kind of some of the common measures and the limitations and such of those.
Okay, because the area that we have our program in is really changing from a blue-collar type area to a highly skilled and highly technical area. The VA is building new hospitals here. There's actually a medical research center going in not too far from where we are. And these types of employers that we could actually obtain the employment with, require higher skilled and, more technically trained employees.
And that would be something you probably want to address within your curriculum. Just keep in mind that the longer those people are enrolled in your program, and the more services that you offer to them, it's less time that you can then, exit them out and enroll new veterans in. So as long as you keep that in mind and can still meet those goals and objectives, you should be okay.
Okay. Now, we also have a grant and per diem program here at our facility. And we already have some clients in-house that have been recently released from incarceration. Would they automatically fall into this program if they've already enrolled in our grant and per diem program?
No, because they wouldn't necessarily be – well, in theory, the best-case scenario, my suggestion would be to enroll them at the same time because technically at risk, if they're in transitional housing, it's not necessarily at risk if they're enrolled in transitional housing there. So there may be a way around that. You probably want to get verification if you are awarded. But my suggestion would be when you do your enrollment and assessment of a new individual that would come into your program, your grant per diem program, that you when you assess them, that you enroll them in at the same time.
Okay, because somebody that's already enrolled in a transitional housing program is at risk of being homeless because transitional housing is very time specific.
And I understand that, but under the Department of Labor's definition, you want to be really, really careful there. I wouldn't suggest getting all of your clients from that.
Okay, thank you very much.
I don't want to get in debate about the definition of homeless because inevitably that's what the next question will be. But at risk,
right, no,
you want
it's not going to be a debate.
Yeah, it's just you want to be very clear that you understand that individuals coming from, you're going to want to try to reach those who have not been able to reach yet.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from James Baer.
Hi. The first question is a follow-up on one earlier about the pre-sentencing diversion. I just want to clarify that someone in that position doesn't necessarily even have had to spend one day in jail.
They would need to be in the system at some level, yes.
Well, what do you mean by the system? They could be they're arrested, but they're not.
Right. So they've been arrested. They're awaiting sentencing. That's what I refer to. And,
okay.
And my wording is probably off there. I'm sorry. I don't know all the legalese. But they need to have been arrested, and then after that, they can have the alternative sentence come into
right.
play.
Right. Which if the community has an option for doing that with them not being even spending a day in jail, that would still be okay because they're at risk of being in jail without the alternative sentencing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the next question, in terms of, the 90, to be eligible for additional funding, you have to get 90% of the goals. So obviously, I know benchmarks are set for entered employment and for employment retention. Mm-hmm. Are benchmarks for the other goals set federally or by the individual?
They're set by the program.
By
your program, yeah. So those are the only federal major objectives that you have to – those percentages, but there are percentages for all the other ones listed there in common measures, but most of those will be set by your organization.
Okay. In the application, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Just one last thing, and I think there's a typo on the last slide, slide 23.
Okay.
This is the definition of who's eligible, veteran persons who served in the active military and who is not discharged or released under conditions other than dishonorable. To me, that reads that you have to have a dishonorable discharge to be eligible.
It basically means anybody who has – if you have a dishonorable discharge, you're not eligible.
Okay, that's not what it says, so I just wanted to
– okay, thank you.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Your next question comes from Sherry Schultes.
Hi. My organization is applying for HVRP as well as IVTP. Can we do direct services under both grants, or do we need to subcontract out on one?
You can do them. You just want to make sure that you have the two. There's two separate programs, and once again, that if you're serving an individual under IVTP, that you're not serving the same individual underneath the same organization's incarcerated veterans, HVRP.
So don't call and roll between those. And then one last question. The sequence of the technical proposal that you listed out on slide 17, is that how our proposal should be listed? Because it's a little different than the SGA.
What's listed in the SGA is what you should list it as.
Okay.
It's not going to matter so much as long as you have all of those, but if you're the SGA is specific to what it should be.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from Angela Hudson.
Hello?
Angela, your line is open.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was open. There was one question that I had that was related to eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
And on one of the first few slides, it mentioned giving the report of any financial auditing that had been done in the last 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
What if your organization has, because we kind of converted from a for-profit to a nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
and we do have financial data 18 months, 2 years old, but it's not for the nonprofit portion, it's for the for-profit. What would I do?
I would suggest applying under the for-profit entity.
Oh, okay. As an eligible. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Okay. I want to thank everyone for their time on the call, and I appreciate you guys letting me know that I had made a couple mistakes within the presentation. I will make those and update the website. We will be posting the audio, and if you do have additional questions, you can shoot me an email or give me a call, and I'd be glad to answer any questions. My phone number is 202-546-1969, and my email address is mlliston@nchv.org. Thank you very much for your time, and best of luck.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.